You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the midside, where we don't write the loopholes, you write the loopholes. I'm your host, Justin M. Lesneski, the hopeful bromantic, and I'm glad you've joined me. It's been a crazy week with a lot of rebranding, and we'll get into all of that. But first, let me introduce my co-host. Joining me this trip from Dale's Lawn, identifying as a woman to forgo his white male gay privilege, William Green.
Hello, hello. It's a beautiful, beautiful weekend, and I have my first kickball practice today. We're returning from COVID, and so I'm very excited, though a little apprehensive. Of course, Justin, there will be ridiculous mask wearing and social distance requirements, no high fives or fist bumps or elbow hugs. Nothing is allowed, but at least we'll be able to be outside running around and playing kickball. So looking forward to practice. Not looking forward to the diversity waiver that I might have to sign, but I avoided it last time, so hopefully I can strategically avoid it this time again.
Okay, so all I just heard from everything you just said is there's a lot of stuff that would make me not play. I wouldn't play because of the mask. I would say, if you're going to make me wear a mask while I'm outside, I have no desire to be around. The only places I wear a mask outside are Disney or Universal if I go. And that's just because of how unique of places they are, but playing kickball. And I have a question about that in a second. But first, I have to ask, diversity waiver?
Yeah, I have no idea. I can't seem to find a copy of it. And I know I avoided signing it it was almost 2 years ago now, right? When I first played before COVID, in the before times. So we'll see.
Do you have an idea what it's about? Like, is it you saying, like, you're doing everything to help this league be diverse or something?
Maybe it's like, I don't know. Maybe it's something like, I'm not going to discriminate against people. I don't know. We'll see. If it's a communist pledge, I don't think I'm going to sign it. Well,
that's what I don't get.
It's through the Varsity Gay League and they're like, US wide. So, who knows? Right. I don't know.
All right. And now I have to get to my kickball question.
Okay.
What do you do at kickball practice? Do you just play kickball?
I guess. I don't know. Last season it was, I was on the casual league. And so we basically had like two practices where we just met for an hour and they went over all the rules and, you know, practice kicking, practice fielding, and just kind of like got people familiar with it. So I don't know. Although practice is much longer. They had us scheduled for 2 hours or 2.5 hours, which seems like a bit much. I was going to bring the dog, but that's a long time to have the dog out there unattended, so to speak. Like for games, last time before COVID again, I could just kind of have him. I have a super long lead and I could just have him lead it out with the crowd. But of course, there's no crowd allowed at games this time around. So. I don't know. Well, this is going to be an interesting experience, and I'll report back next week to see, let y'all know how practice went.
Yeah, I'm really interested in this, because the way you're making it sound to me is this is just a bunch of people who somehow got out of gym class in middle school and high school to not know the rules of kickball and how to play kickball. So there's a lot of things that don't make sense, though, so why don't we just get into it? This life really sucks, are we just complaining? I hope that this mic is on, cause I'm on a roll here. I hope this is making some sense. I hope that you throw up your hands and sing it and tell all the haters that they should just shut up and As always, if you'd like to support the show, you can do so through either Patreon or Locals. Patreon is per episode, Locals is per month, and whatever you give, even if it's just a dollar, even if it's just affirmations, we appreciate it greatly. themidside.com/Patreon or themidside.com/locals. The first thing I wanted to talk to you about today, William, is something I just learned about this morning. All right. So sometimes when I want to watch something, and it's usually when I'm eating, right? Because, you know, it'll take me 15 to 20 minutes to eat something. So I don't want to watch like a full episode of something or like a whole movie. So sometimes when I'm, you know, I want to watch something and I'm just eating, so I just want to watch something quick, I'll go on YouTube and I'll just watch like different vlogs or things. And I tend to watch like theme park vlogs, things like that, Disney vlogs. So I signed in to eat this morning and there were a whole bunch of vlogs about Disneyland's expansion. And I'm like, wait, what are you talking about? Disneyland's closed right now. Expansion, like they're opening at the end of April. What's going on? So I clicked on one that was like 20 minutes because I figured it would be more substantive analysis. And yesterday, Disney announced for Disneyland this thing called Disneyland Forward. And I believe the website is Disneyland Forward. Yeah, DisneylandForward.com if you want to check it out and read all about it. On the website, they have concept art. They have quotes from different members of the Disney team explaining what's going on. And what's really exciting about this, William, and this is what I wanted to sort of throw to you, is apparently the city of Anaheim has realized the value of Disneyland. And what I mean by that is what has kept Disney from being able to expand is zoning laws, where there are single-use zoning laws, you know, single-use zones around Disneyland. So they're not able to expand because, you know, they would have to say, oh, well, this is going to be a hotel or this is going to be shopping. And Disney's really about mixed use right now, where everything is entertainment and shopping and dining all in once. Right. If you look at Galaxy's Edge, the way that was designed, you look at Disney Springs, you look at even what they've been doing with Downtown Disney. And that's what they would look to do with any sort of expansion. But because of the pandemic, I think it's hilarious that, I mean, one of the things we were worried about, I remember you talked about it, was Disneyland possibly going out of business. But it's quite the opposite, because what is going to save all of the damage that's been done, William, over the shutdowns and everything?
It's got to be, you got to return to tourism. But I don't know, this is, I'm looking at this, man, and it seems optimistic, and I appreciate that. But I don't know, you think Anaheim's actually going to allow this? I mean, what are they going to extract from Disney in order to allow this? Let me turn that around.
Well, that's going to be the biggest concern, right? The biggest concern is going to be how much in taxes they're going to charge Disney, right? Are they going to want a percentage of the gate, which they've done before in the past, which has raised the price of the Disneyland tickets, where Anaheim would say, oh, well, we want, you know, 20% of the gate to give you what you want, that type of a deal. So that may happen, and that's a concern, because will it be affordable anymore? The overall point, though, that I think is ultimately a win in the long run is, yes, they are going to do this, because even without raising the gate, William, without getting anything in return, the city of Anaheim realized, and there's a quote out there, I saw it in a video, I don't remember who it's from, but one of the city officials, it might have even been the mayor, said that he realized that Disneyland is important to helping run public services in the city of Anaheim. So basically what they realize is, William, would the city of Anaheim exist without Disneyland in its current form?
Hell no. Who would want to go to Anaheim?
Exactly. So they've realized that. The pandemic has taught people that, because they stripped everything down and they saw where their money was coming from. And with Disneyland not operating, they weren't getting any money. And I think that's tremendous. And I think, you know, this is a victory. Now, there's an even greater concern than Anaheim. I mean, William, is it outside the realm of possibilities that the state of California starts taxing Disneyland more to make up their deficit?
Yeah, I think that's a very big possibility. I mean, if you remember, we still don't have a tier where things are back to normal. You know, we don't have that tier in California. So, you know, why would anyone want to travel here versus Florida right now? With all the restrictions,
right,
that are still in place. Like, there's no reason to. right? Now, people aren't, the truth is, if you are looking to travel to California, I'd say now would be a good time, if only because no one else is coming, right? Everyone is scared away right now, and no one's, and most people are flouting the rules anyway. So,
I mean, it was a birthday. It's so cheap.
I had a friend that had a birthday this weekend. We went to, you know, they're not supposed to serve drinks without alcohol without food. And basically, the kitchen closed at 10. That was their technical last call. But they were just open till 2. It was just like a normal bar. Except for you had to put your mask on to go to the bathroom.
Yeah, we've been doing that for a long time here in Florida. And I've gotten to the point now that I don't even put my mask on to go to the bathroom. I'm like, I'm just walking over there and I'm not walking near anyone. It's fine. Trust me. So I agree with you completely that people are going to go to Florida in the short term. But I think it speaks to ultimately our society not being too far gone. And what I mean by that, William, is the thing I want to just like really hit and emphasize here is them realizing what keeps cities going, what keeps life going, ultimately. And they can't evade the fact. Ultimately, there's a point that they can't evade the fact of what keeps life going in the city of Anaheim. And I think that's a victory because in the long run, it's showing that people will do what they need to do to survive. And that can only benefit reason in the long run.
All right, Dagny. Do you think they want to live?
Well, that's the ultimate question, right? I mean, I don't think people like Gavin Newsom want to live. So yeah. that's a much different question. That's a much different question. But yeah, I agree with you. That is the ultimate core question from that point on, which actually kind of leads into the other stuff we've got here on the outline this week. A couple other things to talk about here. So the first is the after effects of Zack Snyder's Justice League. So I've seen the movie 3 times at this point, twice in color, and then they randomly dropped the Justice's Gray edition on like a Tuesday night or something, and I watched it in chunks over the week because obviously I don't have 4 hours on a work night. But that's part of the thing is that they dropped it randomly. And on Monday, WB CEO Ann Sarnoff came out and said that there's going to be no more Zack Snyder DC movies. She said that the air cut is not going to be released. And before we even move forward from here, William, what do you think of that announcement from Ann Sarnoff?
I think it's predictable. They don't like the fandom menace. They don't like the release of the Snyder cut. Folks, this was purely desperation to get people onto HBO Max. This is part of the larger streaming wars, and unfortunately, this is a pawn in that game. And there's no way that they can afford to continue the sort of Snyder sequels on the streaming service. I mean, now is not a time for big budget movies, right? The theaters aren't even open across the country yet. I don't think you're going to see. I mean, we could already see it in our trailer takedowns, right? Like we're not seeing those kinds of movies right now, and I don't think we will for a while. So
the only ones we'll see are the ones that were already done, like Black Widow or things like that, or Fast and the Furious
Bond.
9.
Yeah,
right. These are remnants that were made from before times. What we can call them, right?
Exactly.
But I think what you're pointing to is something that really is relevant to the hashtag Restore the Snyderverse campaign that was born out of all this. So we know on this show, we were on the forefront of the release of Snyder Cut movement. We were sort of talking about it before anyone was talking about it. But this is the first time anyone's heard me say Restore the Snyderverse. And I don't believe I've even tweeted it once. And there's a big reason for that, William. Now, I want to be clear. I'm going to ask you, after I make my statement, I would watch any movie Zack Snyder made, even if it's another DC movie. What about you?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's because I can trust that I'm going to, like you were talking about a couple shows ago, that I can watch that kind of film and go in and be vulnerable, right? I can really enjoy it, even if it's not a genre that I like, even if it's not a a topic that I might not be particularly interested in, at least I know I can watch that movie and enjoy it.
Yeah, and let's hold on to that word vulnerable. That word vulnerable will come up in our next topic. But yeah, exactly. So this isn't us being against, like, oh, we don't want Zack Snyder to make DC movies. Look, whatever Zack Snyder wants to make, I'm down for at this point. But to me, there is a fundamental difference between release the Snyder Cut and restore the Snyderverse. Release the Snyder Cut to me was saying there is a concrete thing that exists. It may not be in 100% polished form, but we want you to polish that and let us see the thing that already exists. Whereas Restore the Snyderverse is this hypothetical, forward-looking, also backward-looking request that has no real set of criteria to it. Remember, the Snyderverse, what, first of all, you ask 8 different people, they have 8 different definitions of the Snyderverse. And the Snyderverse was when Zack Snyder was announced to do Justice League, Justice League 2, Justice League 3, and then he was also going to help make Aquaman, Flash, Cyborg, Wonder Woman, Green Lantern Corps, right? All these things, right? Again, which of these are considered part of the Snyderverse? But contextually, the stories have changed because the way he had to tell Batman versus Superman and Justice League changed. So Justice League 2 and 3 will be different. So can you even restore that? Is it even possible? Like, the word restore there, can you even restore it? And then, William, as you're pointing out, the context has changed financially and culturally.
Yeah, I think it's, I think it's a great point. I also think that there's a fundamental disconnect between what, how Hollywood treats fans. That is, I think it's good old Doomcock on YouTube that says it all the time. Without respect, we must reject. There's this disrespect for dedicated fans, right? And in a way, it's crazy because it's geek culture has been popularized and marketed, right? So it's fashionable to be a surface level geek about these things, but for the actual passionate fans of things, there is disdain and disrespect, right? So if someone is an actual fan of DC or an actual fan of Zack Snyder or any number of things, actual fan of Superman, those aren't the people that they really want, these companies, right? They want just the mass audience. So these are just means to an end. The fans are convenient to get, butts in the door or to get hype going, but that's it. That's all they're useful for. So, the fact that in a way this is a success for the studio because it's gotten a lot of people to watch, this on HBO Max, and that was the goal. So in that way, it was a good business decision. But that disdain for fans is something that, I don't think that awareness is among fans is so deep at this point that I think there's going to be a lot more missteps by Hollywood in the future. And this is one of those, right? There is a way to do this if they wanted to and make money. But I don't think I don't think it's part of it. Part of it, maybe it not, doesn't integrate with their plans of becoming, the next Netflix or whatever. But I think the other part of it too is they it's not that they want these smaller audiences, right? These small dedicated audiences. And kind of like transferring it to the gaming industry, this is something the gaming industry for the most part has figured out different strategies for understanding and satisfying these different audiences. And I don't think Hollywood has picked up on that yet. Meaning, like, there's certainly some studios that if it's not a hit, it doesn't work, right? But then there's other game studios that, will integrate what a dedicated fan want and what will generate mass appeal and come up with a hit, right? And I don't think we're seeing Hollywood embracing that strategy. The cash cow is have it be semi-popular in the United States, and then have it kill in China, and then you make money. And that's the only business model they understand right now.
Right, because ultimately what it comes down to is the old model of they know better. They know better than everyone. And when you're saying what you're saying, this mistake really started even in Batman versus Superman, where they decided to start cutting that movie down, right? Oh, it has to have this runtime to make this amount of money, to have this amount of screenings to make this amount of money. Sorry, I misspoke. To have this amount of screenings to make this amount of money. It started back then because they knew better than the artist. They knew better than the fans. And that's really what it comes down to. And I think, William, that part of the problem is the fans don't do anything to help themselves. Because this is an argument I made even during release the Snyder Cut, during that campaign, when people started saying, oh, well, we want Ben Affleck to come back as Batman and make his movie. And we want Zack Snyder to come back and make the rest of his movies. So if you truly value something, and this was a miserable experience for these people because of, you know, as we're saying, William, the studio has this mentality of they know better, right? They know better than Zack Snyder. They know better than Ben Affleck. Why would you want these people to go back into this situation? Why would you want the, you know, Zack Snyder to go into that? Why would you want Ben Affleck to go into the situation that drove him back to drinking again? That he hated it that much, that he was miserable because of it. Why would you want them? And it's the same thing with the fans themselves. If this studio is as bad as you think it is, and they've said, well, we're not going to make these movies, why are you trying to reason with them by having a campaign rather than just saying, all right, that's what you think of me? Fuck off. I'm going to go follow Zack Snyder and I'm going to watch Army of the Dead on Netflix and support him because he's the one who respects me. He's the one who's been on my side this entire time. It doesn't matter about the particular concretes. It matters about making good art. And that's what I'm talking about with the self-respect, because I think ultimately they don't have the self-respect because it is about the concretes. Warner Brothers has the right to DC, and people want to see DC, so they want to make this happen. They want to force Warner Brothers to make this happen in a way that makes them like Batman and Batman versus Superman. The world only makes sense if you force it to. William, we're no different here. Who owns the right to Fountainhead, William? Do you know?
No, I don't know.
Warner Brothers owns the rights to Fountainhead. So you don't think if Warner Brothers doesn't make more DC selling movies that Snyder's going to stick around with them? He's going to be gone. He'll go somewhere else.
Yeah.
And if he does, the Fountainhead will go with it, and it won't happen. And you know what? If that's what's best for Snyder, that's what's best for him to make more art, then I'm okay with that. I'm not going to start, you know, make the Fountainhead campaign. And William, it's not that I don't respect these people. It's not that I'm saying like, oh, hey, this isn't cool. Did you see they got 1.5 million tweets for Restore the Snyderverse? And they got like Brad Paisley. Do you know who Brad Paisley is?
No, I'm not sure.
Oh, Brad Paisley's country music superstar has 4.3 million followers on Twitter. So we got people like Brad Paisley to tweet Restore the Snyderverse. But that's the point. If all of this is going on and WB still won't do it and they won't budge, isn't that a sign that the fans should get some self-respect?
I don't know. I mean, I think you're going to see more fragmentation, which is a good thing, amongst content creation, especially as a lot of the cost to make a decent film is actually going down. Now, the cost of blockbuster films are going up, right? But the cost to make a decent film is going down. And I think, you know, obviously special effects and things like that are still very, very expensive, right? The standard for a Hollywood blockbuster is very, very expensive. But, you know, we'll see in some of the reason why Netflix can make movies is because the other costs are going down, right? And you might not be able to hit as high of a bar, but you can still tell a great story. And I think you're going to, certainly not with this legacy media's license stuff, but if you look at something like DC, I mean, God, goddamn, you know, comic books are about bankrupt right now, right? So all they've got is this intellectual property. So I don't know, Justin, what do you think? Do you think we're going to see more more stories being told on smaller scales that satisfy this fan need?
Right. I think that's certainly what Netflix is banking on when it makes something like Army of the Dead. I think they're very forward thinking in that way. And I think the implication of what you're saying is that we're in a recalibration period where, as you called it, the legacy media is sort of going to be dying out. Whereas how much longer are people going to want to see these giant blockbusters with these giant properties for? How much longer are people going to want these reboots for before they want things like Army of the Dead? So I suspect you're correct, and I think it'll be interesting to observe that going forward, the fragmentation of it. And, you know, maybe that sort of streaming approach, the smaller approach, benefits someone like Zack Snyder. We'll see what happens with Army of the Dead. We'll see what happens when he makes Horse Latitudes. Things like that, we'll see what happens with them. But this sort of leads into the next thing I wanted to talk about, William. The next thing I wanted to talk about was sort of the little bit of rebranding I did at the beginning of the show, where I called myself the Hopeful Bromantic, when you talked about the vulnerability thing. And what I wanted to talk about was this concept of, if things are going to get smaller and more fragmented, it really puts the control back into the market. It puts the control back into the market because the consumer is really going to decide what succeeds and what fails. Am I wrong with that assessment?
That's the ultimate arbiter here.
Right. So then, it's really important that we develop as consumers a really strong sense of what we want to see so that we can continue to get the products that we like. And that's why I sort of want to rebrand myself a little bit and rebrand my approach to art with a portmanteau I came up with. And it comes off of the idea of combining the whole catchphrase of false dichotomy, bro. The whole concept of the midside, which the midside is, you know, it's not inside, not outside. It's not high, not low. It's in between. And also the concept of romanticism. So an idea I came up with actually on the phone with Daniel was the idea of bromanticism. And I want to break that a little bit with you right now. What I mean by break that is sort of like, let's tease out what it means a little bit more. To me, just on the surface level, obviously it's romanticism. But it's not romanticism in the sense of like pretentiousness. Because I think a lot of people, when they think of art and they think of, you know, high art and high quality art, there's a pretentious quality to it. It's like super esoteric. And I don't want that. To me, it's the accessibility. But it's also, William, the masculinity. And part of why I wanted to bring it to the show and ask you about it and what you thought about it was, you always talk about, like, you're like, oh, there are guns in this movie. That makes it something I want to see. And to me, that is a part of romanticism.
Yeah,
that is a part of it, is the masculinity that's so sorely lost in our culture. So to me, being bromantic isn't just about watching movies either. It's a whole lifestyle. And I think it's a lifestyle that's missing from our culture. And I think that there's a market and a niche out there that we can really reach of other guys. And you don't even just have to be a guy. It's just people who appreciate masculinity and appreciate celebrating life and enjoying life without being either hedonistic or emotionalistic about it.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. I think, you know, what I'm saying, oh, there's guns and explosions, I think there's an idea that we've talked about it before, where if there's just a lot of sitting around and talking about your feelings, it's not something that's really interesting to me, right? I want to see things happen, and I want to see the results of those things. And there's a focus on having choices and consequences, both internal and external, to a character that's really, really interesting to me. And then there's also just the fact that it's hard to find, like we've talked about it just on the concrete level, it's hard to find good sci-fi is the thing I always joke about. But what makes the sci-fi that comes out so bad is the way that politics is injected into it, or the way that that identity and collectivism is just strewn about, or the just rampant amount of naturalism. And all those things sound really pretentious, but they're not. When you sit and you're bored with a sci-fi film, that's a bad sign, right? When you don't see a character or identify with a certain character's strengths, not that characters need to be perfect or some sort of platonic ideal, but if there's not some sort of strengths that you're connecting to, then it's not, you know, I'm not interested, right? I don't want to see weakness on parade, right? That's not what gives me spiritual fuel. And yeah, I think possibly an aspect of what you're talking about is that, you know, what it takes to fuel to be that spiritual fuel for your more masculine side of your sort of spirit, to use that word loosely.
Yeah, and to sort of build on that, to take out something you said, you talked about sort of feelings and the overemphasis on them. I'm going to sort of run with that a little bit, and I'm going to connect that back to the word vulnerable, which you said earlier in the episode. So one of the things that is said right now in the whole social justice feminist movement is the idea that they say, you know, oh, why do men have to be toxic? Toxic is not showing their feelings, right? Men should be allowed to cry too. And I agree that there's this whole stoicism side of our culture, that men are supposed to be stoic, that they're not supposed to be emotional. But that is answered by saying that men should be emotionalists as well, right? They want men to start acting like women. And that's not the issue. It's not about not showing feelings, but it's about when you're showing the feelings, it's also couching that in the action and the result of them and the effects on reality, not just talking about your feelings and saying, okay, this is what's going on. And what I think the real issue is hold on one second. Sorry, because I'm recording in the closet, Echo likes to come in and out of the closet because the door is closed and cats hate closed doors. So she constantly wants to keep coming in and out, and she hits the door and she yells and things like that. So she just interrupted me a little bit. So sorry about that. So I don't think the real issue is feelings. I think the real issue is the vulnerability. And William, this actually really connects to something a Midsider said in the Discord channel. So from Midsider Blitz Ace 97, he said, something you said on the Zack Snyder's Justice League edition stood out to me. You contrasted Clark's individualism with Arthur's rugged individualism. Thought that was really interesting. Really made me think of a talk I saw on YouTube once. I want to say from Tal Safani, that's the CEO or whoever's in charge, whatever the term is, of ARI, or Aaron Smith, about counterfeit individualism. It'd be cool to see more stuff on the difference between egoistic individualism and the kind of cynical rebel without a cause individualism in fiction and whatnot. I don't know, just something that was on my mind. Well, I think what Midsider Blitz Ace 97 is grasping for here is the concept of vulnerability. I think what makes Clark fundamentally different from Arthur in Zack Snyder's Justice League, Superman fundamentally different from Aquaman, is his ability to be vulnerable. And I think that makes him embrace his values more. When we look at Clark and what brings him back, right? It's seeing Lois, realizing she's pregnant, and going back to the farm and being like, I was happy here. And sharing that embrace with his mother, and sharing that embrace with Lois and all three of them. And he's never non-masculine in the movie, but he's also emotional. Whereas Aquaman, Arthur, is very non-emotional, very non-vulnerable. He doesn't want to open up to people. He doesn't want to let people in. We see that with Cyborg. There's actually a scene later in the movie where Arthur's talking about he's worried that they're basically serving up Victor on a platter, Cyborg on a platter, to the mother boxes. And Flash, Barry says to him, but you don't care. And he's like, I never said that I didn't care. And I think that's what it's about. I think, and this is why Zack Snyder is such an example of bromanticism to me, of being romantic, is that he finds that middle ground. Because when you're talking about individualism versus rugged individualism, I don't think a lot of people realize where the term rugged individualism came from. To me, William, rugged individualism was never used in a positive sense originally. Do you know where it came from?
No.
It was coined by Herbert Hoover during the Great Depression. It was, to me, it was used negatively for people who were saying, well, I don't need to rely on the government. I'm a rugged individual. He was using it in that sense. Now, yeah. I'm not saying that individualism is relying on the government, but rugged individualism, the idea of I don't need anyone else and people don't present a value for me and I can do it on my own, is certainly toxic. It's certainly bad. Even Howard Roark needed, not in the literal sense, but needed and wanted Dominique in his life, presented a value. The traitor principle is an important part of being an individual, is it not?
Yeah, absolutely.
Right, so I think that this whole idea of individualism versus rugged individualism, the whole idea of being vulnerable, I think that's an important part of bromanticism, and I think art is the place to be vulnerable, but the problem is, with naturalism and everything, we push that vulnerability too far until it becomes everything's all about suffering. What do you think?
Yeah. It's crazy the you know, we talk about you know, you mentioned the feminists and the sort of feminist take on men need to cry more. I notice it's men need to cry more. In other words, men need to be show their sad feelings more, right? It's not about, you know, hey, you should cheer louder at football games when your team wins, right? Like that, the kinds of things, the kinds of emotions that men have that are about achieving their values or about celebrating others' achievements of values, that's not what we need more of.
And I'm going to interrupt you real quick. Isn't it because they associate that with toxic masculinity?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we should be more deeply enjoying the things that we enjoy. And that's of course, without being emotionalistic. But I think the kinds of things that show that sort of quote-unquote male bonding, that's the stuff that we should be celebrating and showing more in art, not men crying over their, you know, relationship issues, right?
I think that's a great point that you said, the idea of vulnerable, being able to express even positive emotions. Because I think nowadays, you've pointed something out that's great. It would be encouraged if a guy felt something bad and expressed it, but not if he felt something good and expressed it. If he got really excited and was like, wow, that's awesome. Good job, dude. Good job, bro. People would be like, why are you overreacting? Or even assertiveness, right? Even the assertiveness of saying, wow, that's a value to me. I'm going to act like it's a value to me. I'm going to pursue it like it's a value, would be considered bad. But if the converse of, oh, you know, I'm going to step back and let you know how things are worrying me and hurting me, that would be encouraged more. So I think part of bromanticism then, William, would be the emphasis of the importance of emphasizing the pursuit and the positivity over the negative. Not that the negative isn't real and doesn't have an effect, but that it doesn't have as much of a importance in your life as the negative has. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that's part of it. I think also just respecting how different, you know, there's a different way that, especially men and women, for the most part, deal with negative feelings. And I think that, you know, if we're talking about just interpersonal, right? A lot of, and this is a trend among men and women. This is, so hashtag not all men. But you know, I'm definitely the kind of person that tends to turn towards some work pursuit or some hobby pursuit if I'm dealing with processing negative emotions. The thing I don't do is start talking about my feelings to everyone, right? That doesn't help me. It's not useful, right, to me. That's not the way to process it for me. Now, eventually I will talk about it with people, like especially my close friends, but that's not my repair strategy, right?
Yeah, no, I get it. And for me, it's sort of twofold. Like, yeah, one, do the really romantic thing and go lift some weights, right? Let's hit the gym, bro. Like, that's part of it, right? Just processing being physical.
Yeah.
Right. And then the other thing is not talking about the emotions. Not like, oh, I really need to talk about the fact that I feel sad. But sort of like, what led to this?
Yeah.
What are the real consequences of this situation? Is this worth investing that sort of emotion in?
Yeah.
All right. So I think we have a good base for romanticism here. I think our bromanticism. I think we hit individualism versus rugged individualism. This is the direction I really see this show going in. These are the kind of ideas I want to talk about going forward. This is the important to me to link this back to Restore the Snyderverse. To me, the lesson to take away from Release the Snyder Cut, to take away with everything that happened to Zack Snyder, is not, oh, we need to campaign harder for all the things we want. William, is that a life? Is that a life to always be begging for what you want?
No.
No, and no. That's what I see happening. If you think the thing to take away from it is, oh, if we can just campaign harder, we can get the movies we make. Well, we want made, right? If we can just campaign harder, we can get the movies we want made. I don't think that's the lesson to take away. I think the lesson to take away from is live the life you want to live and celebrate that life and support the people that are doing the same thing. I think that's the lesson to take away from it, not to keep using power structures that may not agree with you. Try and move towards it so it's healthy relationships. And I think that's the direction we need to go in. And I think that's the lesson to take from all of this.
Yep. Hollywood.
Do you have any lessons to take away?
Hollywood is an abusive spouse. So let's cut big Hollywood out of our lives.
Well, and, you know, it's not just Hollywood, right? I mean, one of the things, if people have seen me, you know, over the last year or so, I've started following the wrestler EC3 a lot. And I've started sharing a lot of his content and supporting him because he sees the same thing in the wrestling industry, where you have this big corporate giant, WWE, and they have created the industry to act the same way as Hollywood acts. And it shows you it's not a right-left issue, right? Because Linda McMahon worked for the Trump administration. Vince McMahon is known for being right-wing. So this is not a right-wing left-wing issue. This is people getting in power, thinking they know better, and just not listening to people and not having the trader-principal relationship. Okay, so we're going to take this new perspective, this new bromantic perspective, and we're going to move forward with that in the mid-side. Look for that. This is the sort of new direction of the show. If you're not down, I understand. If you're not, this doesn't interest you, I understand. But you know what? This is really just sort of a subtle rebranding and a subtle shifting of what we've always been doing. Isn't this sort of always what the mid-side's been about, William?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you can see it in all of the, you know, the stories we've covered, the works that we've dissected, our trailer reactions, everything.
Yeah, and I even think Witness the Farce is part of that, where Witness the Farce is sort of like, I'm not going to give this any more energy than it deserves. Instead, I'm going to laugh at it in a way that helps celebrate the things that are still good in the world. And we even, to connect this back to the first news story, that's how I approach the first news story. Yeah, there are things to worry about that you brought up, William. But isn't it funnier just to say, hey, look, you guys tried to fuck everyone with the pandemic in California. But what did that lead you to understand? That you need productive, valuable companies, productive, valuable people to keep your society going. Broadcast to a network station of people viewing their favorite.
episodes. I can't find a new pitch to throw the studio. I need a rerun to better cast the next series of events. In the air timeline lapse, my made-for-TV type was written off in the last season when I wasn't focused on.
As always, if you would like to continue this conversation or any conversation during the week, you can do so by joining our Discord channel. The link to it is on themidside.com or themidside.com/podcast. Just click on any episode link and there will be a join Discord link in there and you can join the conversation. And as you saw, there was a great comment this week. Yo, BlitzAce97 really, really helped us, really helped me with my thinking in particular, and I appreciate that. And, you know, we've been having some great conversations in here. I think we had a discussion, William, about Wyoming versus Florida. Was that in there?
Yeah, we discussed how your irrational hatred of snow has led you to Florida.
Fuck snow. So, yeah, there's this great conversation like that. So join us. It'll be great. You know, share stories of the bromantic lifestyle. So for the review this week, William, I want to institute a new rating system from now on. Hopefully we'll get drops for this eventually. And this is not for Trailer Takedown. I think actually, William, I think hug and tackle work perfectly for what we're going for romanticism. Doesn't that fit that perfectly already?
It does. Yeah.
Right. So we're going to keep that. But for the reviews, one of the things I've always sort of been hesitant about or not liked as much about the show is the rating system. Like, you know, you should see it, you shouldn't see it. I don't like people being like, oh, you know, like, this is a bad movie, this is a good movie. But a rating system that sort of says how in line with it is the way you want to approach art is sort of what I want more. So I've come up with sort of this system, and I want to see what you think of it. This goes from the worst rating to the best rating. So the worst rating would just be a no, just a flat no, just no. Then the second to worst rating, which is kind of like, you know, it's bad, but, you know, there's some redeeming qualities to it, would just be no, bro, which is sort of like saying, like, bro, just don't see it. Then the middle is just bro, where, oh, it's fine. It exists. It's a movie. It's worth seeing. It's not worth seeing. Like, do what you want with it. Then there's bromantic, because, you know, this has a lot of the elements of romanticism in. It's good. It's worth seeing. And then the top rating, which is like, this is like, you know, this is a movie you need to see, right? So this would be Zack Snyder's Justice League. It would be so bromantic. What do you think of that rating system?
I like it. Let's see its utility in action.
All right, the utility in action. Which actually, this is a really interesting test case for this rating system. Do you know what the movie Nobody is about?
I have not even heard of it. What streaming service is it on?
I have no idea because I went to see it in the movie theater because I live in Florida.
Oh, Lord. Oh, Lord. And you didn't get
the COVID right now.
Oh, man.
So this stars Bob Odenkirk, and he's just a normal family man. And these two people break into his house, and he does nothing to defend himself. And they end up leaving with, like, $50 and, like, his watch and, like, he thinks his daughter's kitty cat bracelet. But what happens is he just has this deep desire in him to do something to protect his family afterwards. Now, this is where things sort of take a left-hand turn, because that description itself sounds bromantic, does it not?
Yeah, it sounds like a riff on maybe Taken or those kinds of movies.
Right, or John Wick, right?
Yeah.
Right, it sounds like a riff on that. But what ultimately you find out in this movie is this guy used to work for the government. And when people wouldn't follow the rules, ultimately there was a point where you couldn't arrest them or do anything to them. So he was sent in just to erase them, basically. And his position was called Nobody. So when he says, I'm nobody, that's what he means by that. So the movie is he goes out and he tries to find the people who stole, he thinks, his daughter's kitty cat bracelet. He goes and he finds out they're two poor Hispanic people. And in one of the weirdest moments of the movie, he sees they have a baby who is on like a respirator, and he feels bad and he just leaves because of that. But then on his way back, he's on a city bus, and these Russians crash their car and take over the city bus. And it's just him and a woman on it. And he's sitting on the bus. He's like, please, please, please do something. Now, they harass the woman. And I want to say harass because I want to be clear. There's a difference between harassment and assault. And they say some things to her. They're inappropriate. They insinuate they would like to assault her or they want her to think they're going to assault her. But they don't do anything. Also because he gets her off the bus. Which is fine, right? Get her off the bus. But then what he does is he beats the shit out of these five Russians on the bus. Beats the shit out of them. Okay? And this scene was very, very difficult for me to watch. It was difficult for me to watch because he's like taking elements of the bus and using it to hurt these people. Like he is, this is gruesome. Have you seen the John Wick movies?
Yeah, I've seen the first one.
Okay. So it's very violent, right? But is it straight violent or is it stylized?
It's definitely stylized. It's over the top in places, but it's stylized and motivated violence.
Right. So the stylization and the motivation do a lot to make that movie work. Whereas this scene, first of all, the motivation is this is way not warranted for what these guys were doing. Yeah, they're drunk as a skunk. Yeah, they were harassing this woman, but they hadn't touched her yet. They hadn't touched the bus driver. He'd got both of them off the bus. He could have just left. And then the stylization is this is very much like a B movie where the director wants you to see the gore and feel the gore. It's sort of like a less stylized version of Zack Snyder's Watchmen, whereas Snyder really wanted you to consider the violence in that movie and whether we should celebrate it or not. Well, this movie was almost like you're supposed to be on this guy's side, but the violence is so gross and disgusting that you're not on his side. And I think it's a major mistake by the director. I mean, the scene ends with this one guy, he literally trakes him with a small knife and a straw. And you see him do it. You see him cut the guy's throat open and put the straw in.
That's gross,
and it's
man.
Like knowing this is all unnecessary. So then the movie cuts and it goes to there's a Russian mobster who one of those guys was his brother. And the rest of the movie is just a feud between these two until Bob Odenkirk kills all the Russian mobsters and the Russian mob boss himself, and he gets the help of his father, Christopher Lloyd, and his, I'm assuming, adopted brother, RZA. And there's a setup at the end of Christopher Lloyd and RZA. They're in an RV and they're driving somewhere with a whole bunch of guns. So there is a setup there. And I don't want to downplay this completely. I want to say that there's a lot of that's entertaining in here. Right? Christopher Lloyd's very funny. RZA's entertaining. Some of the violence later on is sort of entertaining in the over-the-top sort of John Wick way. At the ending, the last sequence almost becomes like Home Alone meets John Wick, where Bob Odenkirk's character buys a warehouse and then booby traps it. So it's sort of entertaining in that way. But the problem is, William, all of this has been done better. It's been done better by Taken. It's been done better by John Wick. It's been done better by the action in any Zack Snyder movie. Like I said, Watchmen. When I think of Batman versus Superman, the warehouse Batman scene or the nightmare Batman scene, right? These things have been done better. So ultimately, this is an example of just because something has guns and explosions, it doesn't make it romantic. So part of me wants to give a bro for that reason, because if you turn your brain off and you just, you know, watch the explosions and you enjoy Christopher Lloyd and how funny he is and the way he acts in this, there's some good elements to it that would seem masculine. But to me, I think you're ignoring the true vulnerability of being a man, where you're saying, no, violence and assertiveness must be used in pursuit of something moral in order to be worthwhile. And the bus scene just really, really ruins this movie for me. So I can't give
Is that just because you know, you're not in the words is violence crap? Because maybe that is motivated in that moral system, right? If you think words are violence, I'm not defending it. I'm just saying, like, it seems like an example of that, right? Like, is it just really just a concrete, this is what it really looks like if you think words are violent?
Okay, I think I get where you're coming from. But that, again, that only makes the assessment of the movie worse, does it not?
Yeah, well, I'm trying to ruin your assessment of the movie, I guess.
No, you're not. You're just solidifying my review. I think that you've only pointed to that making the movie worse and out of line with the movie, right? Like, this is a whole thing about, like,
yeah,
him trying to be a...
Right.
The guy's trying to be a family man, and that's why he gave up his job for, you know, being the eraser type character, because he wanted to be a family man, but it wasn't in line with who he was as a person. Which, again, I mean, maybe if you want to take the social justice read, is masculinity at odds with being a family man? Is that what they're trying to say with this movie? You could actually read the movie that way. So taking your lens on the bus scene and applying that to the main character, it seems like they're even saying that about the main character, right? He was like, thank you for letting me pretend for a little bit. So he can't even use his abilities in a positive way. In the way, one of the things I think is the best about the John Wick movies, especially the first one, William, is that he is channeling that because of his values. Okay. Any thoughts on that?
Not sure that I follow because I didn't see the movie, but...
I thought you saw the first John Wick.
I thought we were talking about In Nobody. Sorry, you really lost me.
No,
there.
I said in the first John Wick, I think one of the reasons the violence works is he's doing it not in spite of his values. Like,
right.
In Nobody, he burns his family house down and sends his family to go hide. In John Wick, and, you know, they've certainly in John Wick addressed it by killing off his wife, so he doesn't have as much to worry about. But he's doing it because of his values, not in spite of them.
Right, right. Yeah, and that's what makes the actions that gives the moral context for the violence, right? I mean, without that it's just without that it's insane, right?
Right.
And in real life it would be insane anyway, but
right.
But in art we're stylizing it to show the moral point.
Right. And John Wick would be bromantic, or perhaps so bromantic, because it stylizes it in that way where, you know, it's insane, but you're saying we can indulge in this insanity because it is fake. Whereas this movie, Nobody, because it's in spite of the values, even though it has the guns and the explosions and the quote unquote assertiveness and the quote unquote masculinity, I can't give it a bromantic or even a bro. So this has to be a no bro movie, where I'm not going to tell you completely. This is just a no. No, don't see this. But this is just if you saw this, I would be like, no, bro, what are you doing? Why are you seeing this movie?
Trailer takedown.
As
First
always,
trailer.
Hit it, William.
Way to step on it, Justin.
There it is. I was waiting for that one. Okay. So before we do first trailer, I just want to remind people that now I put the links to the trailers in Discord. So they're not on the website anymore. So I'm incentivizing you to join the Discord. So if you want to watch the trailers before the episode or during the episode or after the episode, all those links are going to be in the Discord channel.
First trailer.
Concrete Cowboy is a Netflix movie starring Idris Elba, in which he is a cowboy who lives in the inner city with, it looks like, his son, and it looks like the mother is not in the picture. The movie seems to be largely focused on their relationship, but it also seems to be focused on the relationship of these concrete cowboys. So Idris Elba's character is part of a community of cowboys in the inner city where, they dress like cowboys. They wear cowboy hats and boots, and they literally ride horses. relationship between them and the culture at large. And the added twist here, of course, is if you don't know, Idris Elba is black, and it seems like every actor in this movie is black. So, William, I really liked the relationship between him and his son. I think that could make a very compelling drama. And there were elements here of the way this was done that seems like it could be stylized in the style of 8 Mile, where visually it's not stylized as much, but the essentialization of their conflict could be stylized. So there's a lot to potentially look forward to here. My concern is just whenever you add race to anything in the year 2021, you don't know if it's going to go the social justice route or not. So even though it didn't bother me personally, I thought all the performances were great, and I thought this looks like it could be compelling. I just would be concerned about this due to that reason. So luckily this is on Netflix, because this is a Netflix and hug.
Netflix and hug.
Yeah, when I watched this, it's something that it looked interesting, and it looked like something that the premise is very interesting, you know, horses and dealing with this kind of culture clash. And that seems really interesting. And the acting seemed pretty good. The trailer definitely kept me interested. I don't know. I'm so hesitant and on the fence with this, though, because there's so much baggage that come with this topic in this current year. I think, though, that this is something that I could basically tell within the first 30 minutes, whether it's going to be enjoyable or not. So in the spirit of trying to find good romantic art, I think that I will give it a chance. So I'm going to questionably hug it.
Hug?
I think what you said, the exact quote, or maybe not the exact quote, but to paraphrase you, that you would know in the first 30 minutes or not if you would enjoy the movie, is true of all the trailers this week.
Second trailer.
Stowaway is another Netflix movie. This one stars Anna Kendrick. In it, she is on a mission to Mars with Daniel Day-Kim, and I can't remember who the other woman is. And accidentally, one of the technicians from the launch pad got locked into a conduit and is on the mission. The mission is a 2-year mission, and they find out that when he was locked in, it also damaged the life support, so they only have enough life support left over for 3 people to make the trip, and there are 4 of them on the trip. I am not even going to address the part of the premise where you're going to have 3 people together on a ship for over 2 years, and it's 2 women and 1 man. I will leave that to your imagination as to how that was originally envisioned. As far as this premise itself, part of me as a sci-fi person, and I'm really interested to hear what William has to say, is sort of interested in this idea of values, where they played up in the trailer, well, this is our life's work. We've been doing this research for a long time, and we may have to give this up in order to save this person's life. And is it worth the risk to try and save this person's life? But the other part of me is like, all right, this looks stupid. This looks like it's going to be really slow. It looks like it's going to be really boring and really pedantic. So as much as I want to Netflix and hug this, I'm going to be honest, especially with how much Anna Kendrick annoys me, I'm never going to give this a chance. I could see why someone would give this a chance, and I want to hear what William has to say. But for me, this is a tackle.
Tackle.
This trailer did a terrible job of setting up the premise. Either that, or this is a terrible premise. As someone who worked in this industry, there's no way you would get a stowaway this way, right? Maybe there's more to the premise.
I'm going to interrupt you, because that was something that pissed me off, because it's sort of like the bus scene in Nobody, where I was like, so the entire point of this movie is you were an asshole and went overkill on these people and got involved with the Russian mob. So I'm supposed to want you to survive? I just think you're an idiot right now. It's the same thing here. I was watching this, I go, so this giant fucking company and or the government was so incompetent they let somebody get locked into the conduit while injured? It sounds to me like the premise of this movie is incompetence.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's pretend like there was actually good writing to set this up where you have a stowaway. Okay, so you have a stowaway, you have this 2-year mission, you don't have enough, like, the first thing you should know is the resource impact of that. Like, cool, okay, yeah, we have this interesting dichotomy here, or just a moral choice between, you know, what do we risk now that we have an extra life on board? All right, cool. So is this just going to be action the rest of the time? And I don't know. I don't know that this is enough for a whole film. So, for that reason alone, I think that there's no reason for me to watch this. I don't think what is presented to me in this trailer shows, you know, justifies a, you know, 100-minute runtime. So I'm going to tackle.
Tackle!
That makes me feel better, William.
Third trailer.
Big Shot stars John Stamos as an NCAA basketball coach who, for some reason, goes to coach in a private girls' school high school. Private girls' high school varsity basketball team. The overhead shot, I believe they show the establishing shot, William. I think that was Laguna Beach, wasn't it, that establishing shot they showed?
It kind of looked like it. I wasn't 100% sure.
I wasn't either, but it looked like Laguna Beach to me. I don't know where else it could be. Again, I don't know why all this stuff is set in California. The basic idea seems to be sort of like the Mighty Ducks, sort of like Gordon Bombay, right? In the original Mighty Ducks, Gordon Bombay got in trouble for drunk driving, so he had to do charity and set up the Mighty Ducks. That's how that all started, coach a local hockey team. This seems to be that this guy sort of like Bobby Paterno, not Paterno. Who is the coach who was, like, throwing chairs and stuff, and he wore red?
Oh, man. Was it the Indiana coach?
People, yeah. I can't remember his fucking name. The fat white guy. Yeah. What was his name?
No idea.
I forget his name, but you guys know who I'm talking about. So they even show John Stamos throwing a chair at some point, right? So it seems to be like he has such issues that he's relegated, basically. Nobody else will hire him except the private girls' high school. And then there seems to be, you know, drama with the girls not wanting to buy into his system, and they want to do things their way because, you know, they're teenagers and they're super smart and they're, you know, going to go to the best schools. So they don't want to buy into his program. And here's the thing. I have the opposite reaction, William, or I should say the inverse reaction to this that I have to Concrete Cowboys. I like that this is a sports movie where ultimately they're going to succeed by realizing the value of hard work and commitment and discipline. However, the execution of this does not look good. It looks average. It looks like a Hallmark movie. Now, saying that, Hallmark movies aren't bad because they do have a good meaning at the end and they do have a good purpose. So just like with Concrete Cowboy, I have drawbacks about possibly the end meaning, but I think the execution looks excellent. Here, I don't think the execution looks anywhere decent, or I'll say it looks decent. It looks okay. It looks like a Hallmark movie execution. I do like where the end point seems to be going with this, so I will likewise give this a Netflix and hug.
Netflix and hug.
I think I could summarize my view after watching this trailer in just one sentence. Let's just watch Mighty Ducks. Tackle.
Tackle!
I mean, that is true, but I have to say this, William. Was John Stamos not perfectly cast from a visual standpoint in this role?
Yeah, definitely.
This looks like the role he was born to play. Now, again, with some of his acting, he doesn't look like he's talented enough to play the role. Like, when he threw the chair, I was like, that just looks like John Stamos pretending he's capable of being mad at someone.
Final trailer.
The Suicide Squad is James Gunn's sequel/soft reboot of The Suicide Squad. There's not much to say here plot-wise in this. This establishes a whole bunch of characters, though. It establishes Idris Elba's character, which I believe is Bloodsport, John Cena's character, which is Peacemaker. Joel Kinnaman is back. He looks a lot different, though. He looks a lot more jacked in this movie. Maybe it's just because he's wearing that tight yellow shirt. Harley Quinn is back. Margot Robbie's back as Harley Quinn. Sylvester Stallone, that's the name I was looking for, plays King Shark in this. here's my issue with this movie. Do I think this would be entertaining? Yes. Am I thankful that HBO Max now lets us stream things rather than just going to see them? Yes. Would I see this in theaters if there was nothing else showing this weekend? Yeah. Again, as I've said before, there's gourmet food, right? There's a nice steak from a steakhouse, and there's Marvel food or McDonald's food, right? To me, this is McDonald's. This is just, and my problem is, this William just plays to me like Guardians of the Galaxy. This seems like exactly the same thing. This seems like John Cena has the Batista role. Oh, look, they're both professional wrestlers and they're both using that kind of humor where they're playing on the over-the-top absurdity that someone would say something literally that you usually don't say literally. I mean, look, the John Cena joke about the bag of dicks, like he executed that well. He was very entertaining with all of those lines, right? King Shark just seems like a version of Groot. This doesn't seem like anything amazing, original. Does that mean I hate this movie? No. Does that mean I'm going to talk shit about it? No. It just means when it comes up, I'll see it if there's opportunity to see it, if it makes sense to see it, because I love going to the movies and I love seeing new movies. But I'm also not going to invest energy thinking and worrying about this movie. It's going to exist. It's not going to be terrible. It's not going to be earth-shattering. Netflix and hug.
Netflix and hug.
Ah, Justin, I think you're way too generous. This movie looks boring. I'm not even sure what they're trying to do. Is this just like a buddy comedy among the bad guys? Like, I don't know. It just seemed like here's some random characters that you liked. They're gonna hang out again. Come watch this movie. I don't know. It didn't seem interesting to me, so I'm going to tackle it.
Tackle!
I mean, isn't buddy comedy among the outcasts sort of the description of Guardians of the Galaxy?
Yeah.
Right. So I think what you said is a fair description. I can't speak to the plot, because as you said, we don't know what they're going for right now, but I'm going to assume the plot is enough of a MacGuffin to make me, you know, want to watch where these people go. And I mean, look, we've said it before, even in Birds of Prey, which I know you didn't see William, but is Margot Robbie not phenomenal enough as Harley Quinn to make the first Suicide Squad watchable?
Yeah, I think just for those parts. Yeah.
Right. It's the same thing with Birds of Prey. I'm not a particular fan of Birds of Prey as a movie. I don't think it's particularly well made, but I watched it and I enjoyed it because of Margot Robbie. And I think it's going to be the same thing here. You've got her. You've got Idris Elba, who's a phenomenal actor. John Cena looks like he's going to be funny in his role.
I don't know. You're not convincing me.
I'm not trying. I'm just trying to explain my point of view, right? Again, romanticism has that spectrum as well. So... all right, that brings an end to the episode here. What did we learn this trip, William?
Well, I learned about romanticism and its application to art and art appreciation. Justin, what did you learn this trip?
I think we came to a better, more concrete, more explicit understanding of romanticism, not just as an approach to art, but as a lifestyle. And the whole idea of vulnerability not just being... oh, hey, here are the negative things, boo-hoo, but also being vulnerable enough to be like, hey, this is what I like, this is what I love, this is what I want, and I'm going to approach it in a rational and direct manner. And I think that gives us a good new direction for the show, and hopefully all of our lives going forward. I'd like to thank you all for listening this episode, this edition, this trip. As always, the show would be nothing without you, our listeners. I want to thank our libertarian listeners. As you can see, lifestyle is really important to us here. So even though we have a lot in common with you all and with Liberty.me, who's syndicating us, it's also about lifestyle. So we hope you'll listen to that and think about that and reflect on some of the things we're saying. If you want to support the show, you can do so any number of ways. Patreon or Locals. Patreon per episode, themidside.com/Patreon, Locals per month, themidside.com/locals. You can buy some merch at themidside.com/store. Now that we have sort of a new direction, I'm going to start thinking about how to design some bromanticism merch out there, so we'll get some better t-shirts out there. I got to think of how to be careful about that because I don't want to wear a shirt that just says bromantic in the gym. That might come across wrong, William. Am I wrong?
Yeah, you might get some unwanted attention.
Right. So we got to be careful with the marketing here. We got to be careful with the branding here. So, but that is something that I would also like to, you know, to create. Also, you can support my novel, The Cut. It's at themidside.com/cut. You can also search for my name and The Cut on Amazon. That's based on a true story version of what happened during the production of Justice League. And most of all, the best thing you can do to support the show, William, what's the best thing you can do to support the show?
Tell a friend, my friend.
Tell a friend. Find other bros out there. Find other bromantics out there. There are other people out there. I found some great people. One of them is listening right now. I have found some great people who really understand the lifestyle and really get it. And I think it's making all of our lives better. It's made my lives better. This show has made my life better. Let's find other people like that and keep growing the midside. This concludes your journey into the midside. I'm Justin Emelzneski reminding you that when things get tough, take a step back and witness the farce.
Have a bromantic day.
Hey, William, during one of the transitions to the arts segment, you dropped out for a second. Is everything going to be fine on the track you send me?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep. That was a Discord misclick.
Okay. Sounds good.